Nancy Hanks Midnight Show.
Blast of wind and the hound's cry and the hungry beasts that prowl, nibbling the bare winter's bough and finding the deep root lurking the juice under the snow. But the woman Nancy with her child Sarah asleep in the bare cover with the bread next to her to keep it from freezing, and the gaunt hungry child inside her, his hands like fins, his knees knocking her as he heaved upward against her sides, asking for something, for his thirst and his loneliness. The woman had no roots to gnaw, no beast to save her, no book, nor bell, nor fine talk to bring the young one in. The unborn child heaved upward, sounding, and she rose in alarm. Would he crack out now? Where is the bolt of birth, she thought, who counts the fingers even? There was no answer but the prowling, knocking, unborn child, casting up wing or fin, gathering the substance of a torn man in the new wilderness. On such a night of howling, substance of a torn man, of beasts and hunger, in such an early season of a nation's growth. Anger warmed her too when she thought of the great sea of snow rolling away to Elizabethtown, where the taverns would be roaring with heat and rum, and Tom, as like as not, smoking in that awful calm he had, the warm grog down his gullet, and the laughter and talk of others who had been to far places, and eyes on the white thighs of Millie, forgetting the seed already sowed, and the harvest breaking the furrows now. Standing in the center of the silence, with the howling of hunger outside, the eyes in the snow, and the evergreens, and all the lonely burrows of hunger, the faces arched in asking outside the door, the eyes in the frozen fur of hungry animals, and inside her the lean, bony, hungry child, scratching at her ribs. She heard the scratching at the door, the gnawing at the cabin roots, the popping of the frozen trees, and the long belly howl of hunger and of the chase, and one thing eating another. In mirage came the days of her own young hunger, a fair wilderness girl running in the burrows, peering from the leaves, bathing in the sunken springs, walking the streets of Elizabethtown, bearing the pointed finger and the whisper about her mother, Lucy Hanks, who had brought her over the Cumberland Gap. With no father, and singing with the sin, once posted by the city fathers with a terrible word, fornication, and given a year's probation by the man to be her husband, who wore a long coat and a stern face. Though now Lucy was broken to the furrow. Listen to the running of the gentleman's hounds, hungry for prey. They sounded now 2 miles to the west near the sparrow cabin. And what if the child should come early and be born early? Then who would lean over the one-legged corner bed and say a word of comfort and cut the cord of life? Count the time again from crabapple time, and it should be February then, for sure. You never could tell with this one. Not round and swimming in a fair summer like Sarah had been, but strange in her, like a sack of rocks. Was that a knee or a hand to shake hello? As if she nourished in her a fin from the deeps, as he seemed to moan in her lonely, and turned with some questing beyond her, with a pressure of delight and urgency. She had bent over laughing in the fall when his knocking had started, when she and Sarah had picked the forest nuts, buried potatoes, ground the cornmeal. She would bend over laughing and shake her head and know that there was a friend coming to her loneliness in the wilderness. Hush thee, thy father's a gentleman, her mother had sometimes said. She laughed now, putting her hands on the gravid center which seemed to contain its own heat and life. Where are you from? She asked the unborn child, in a lone cabin, in the gray light with the hounds running for sure, far off, near the hills. Sarah moved and she masked her face, neatly folding away the swollen fear and loneliness. But Sarah slept again and Nancy ground that Tom under her heel for the silence in him. With the muteness of him, being his own man since 12, walking west alone, no higher than a grasshopper. He was a hunter, not a plowman, quick to look down the barrel of a gun to get prey in his sight, and she knew how every little animal felt, doomed by his steady, silent gaze. No dancing in him, or singing, or fancy tall talk, and no softness for the reading of a book, or the thoughts from the minds of tall, spired men. He ate, filled the pot, he came to bed. When she shyly looked at his stocky figure bringing in meat when no one else could, she had thought he would be a friend to her, lonely like herself and shy in his wooing. So the bands had been published and the country people had come, with buckboards or horseback, from way in the back country, the swamp people, the plain hunters, even old Daniel Boone, and everything had been in Kentucky style, with the guests stuffing themselves with bear meat, wild turkey, wild ducks, maple sugar lumps tied on a string, peach and honey preserves and the whiskey barrels running like spring trees. It had been right gay to mount the horse behind Tom and put your arms around his stocky waist and feel his back like a rock of ages, protecting you from the shouts and the jokes that made you blush. To ride in the blossoming of June to the one-room cabin behind the courthouse and turn dismayed then after the night, caught in his trap, running in the trap of a little cabin, and only then remembering the heft of a man over you, the dark head between your hands, and the will of a man not taking you in, and all the gay fixings gone, and only a terrible darkness like drowning over you, and the sound of your own weeping, like the spring she had seen Tom fire into to start it flowing, and no woman to speak of it to, each burying her crop in silence, saying nothing, and the earth buried in silence. He had invaded and stupefied her mind. Reading to him was akin to wantonness. I always suspected about that reading, he said. How you learning to read from sleeping with that golden-haired preacher who come here to bring one of them concerned books once? Or running out ogling every son of a gun with a book, or a mite of learning coming down Wilderness Road? And she had flown at him like a magpie. You don't learn reading in bed. Reading is harder than cutting down a tree. I'm gonna have me a son that takes to reading, who wants to know something beside the eye down the barrel of a gun. He wants to know about the whole enduring world and the time of man upon it. You talking mighty flighty and high and mighty for a plain hunter's wife. And he had taken her down on the bed by violence. She thought, a boy now can go out in the pike where everyone from the east is passing by. And he can get him a heap of learning just that way. And the blab schools is a coming in. And I heard there was a library of books not far from here. And there would be all and sundry to come and speak to a boy in the wilderness and tell him what they know and what they bring with them. He could study everything out now, and nobody telling him he's a woman and should be put in the stocks on Courthouse Day in Elizabethtown. There are men passing by here every day of a truth-telling nature, and they would give it out to a boy. She sat on the edge of the one-legged bed waiting, her mind roving out in the windy twilight, looking for food. Thoughts came to her, and all were her own, since it was a crime for a woman to look into a book. She felt like the smallest door in the universe, through which now came a strange man, like a little cave, secret and unknown, like a pod in the frost, a center whirling inward, now full of dreams she never knew, alive in knockings and stirrings, impressions of things and times she would never live to see. Tough and brown and enduring she was, a storm in an acorn, a raft in a nut, a woman in a cabin, and she left town, the poor huntsman, out of the circle of her cat's cradle, and turned to her own creation. The wind leaned and blew against the door, and she laughed and spoke to it, "Go away from my door, all of you go away, and to the hungry child I'll feed you, I'll find you food, I'll born you right there without no granny woman." For she saw clearly, standing wildly and alone, her fist clenched, that she would deliver herself in February, when the snow would be deep and nobody would come down the road through those heavy drifts, and she would wait alone the day when she would be brought to bed, nigh on February, she figured it, and she would struggle alone to bring him to birth. The raw-boned winter's hunter spawned this swamp baby who would be too lean, too dark, forest thing, made of too much squirrel meat and pawpaws and wild nuts and loneliness. And I'll give you warm milk. You'll trot beside me like a long-legged fawn in a bad season, lean and rangy but beautiful to me. My loneliness made tall, my hunger walking, a friend in the wilderness, hugging herself against the cold that crept up like wolf howls under the door through the cracks. She asked with the knobs pressing against her side, "Is that your head or your knees or the butt end of you? Are you there, Abe? Are you warm?" And the awful answer came, "Hunger. I am hungry in the darkness." The knocking said, and with an awful gnawing hollowness, she admitted at last, "The hunger that rears in flowers and beast, speaking from the bright fanged mouth that ask from beast's eyes in darkness from fang and fur to claw and hand. With a blind strength, she took the long and wieldy gun, loaded, rammed it, pushed with all her might against the leather-hinged door, with a gasp fell into the great space and cold of the earth and sky. The white space and the long shadows, the frozen lyre of the grasses, the earth opened fanwise, stretching out in overlapping waves beyond and beyond, and the white pulsing cold struck her, and she saw it strike blue against the snow and vault in an incredible flight of light, which seemed to beat her as the wintry day drifted to darkness and the frost cupped the light like a shell. The open door let in the baying of the hounds, and she could see within the sound their red mouths dripping. All the shadows moved, and she had the feeling of eyes looking at her from the wind, the shadow, and the hill. And she imagined she could hear the lipping of the spring, still unfrozen under the snow. And above she felt the avaricious birds flying low, hawk or crow or owl, peering upon crouching catamount, mink or deer, or tiny glass-eyed mice, or hungry rabbits. Who hunted her down? She had a mad predatory hunger, now keen as that of the animals to smell the warm odor of meat cooking. Cradling the gun, she pushed the door shut and turned into the cold, sinking to her knees, floundering down the barrels, and she felt the child clutch her and hang to the hungry cliff of her sides. She felt something following her, and looking back, saw only the cabin almost dark. How could so small a space hold begetting and birth, the sorrow and the waiting? It seemed to her like herself, a cave's mouth opening inward, vast spaces of the earth. She turned and went on down the snowy hill, and ahead in the tricky light, she thought she saw many animals around the sinking spring, and she stopped to make her cabin eyes focus. She stood in the frosty cold a long time, waiting to see what shadows moved. The snow to her knees, she blended with the swell of the frozen land, and she let the sense of touch of the land come back to her. But she felt then a shadow following her, stopping when she stopped. She felt it behind, along her back, at the hair roots, and she stood still. It stood still also, and she thought it was only the secret life around her, the eye of bird, of fox, of rabbit, of nests of snakes, even of chrysalis, hanging from a tree limb. She moved forward, her long dress wet now, but she thought she saw a lean rabbit in the scrub. A rabbit in the pot would send up a savory odor, and there would be a little meat for the picking. But the shadow behind her again moved, and the feeling froze her neck and made her back ache. She stopped, and the shadow stopped. Far off she could hear the baying of the dogs, now wild upon the chase and the kill. The gun hung heavy in her hand, and she felt a moment of utter cold. Then against the sky she saw the head of a doe lift, and for a moment she thought it might be an Indian, but then unmistakably she saw the familiar sight of the deer standing on the spring mound, its tender butt reared, looking in fright. The shadow behind her moved, streaked like the breath past her. She stood with her mouth open, but did not know if it was herself or the lion that screamed or the deer. It was a sharp rending of the cold air. The baying hound seemed to swerve and stop, and then the monumental shadows struggled by the spring silently, as in childbirth, with only grunts and strange tearings and terrible tensions of blood and bones. She stood like a tree rooted, her arms outheld, then silence except for a lapping sound, and to her horror the big cat dragged the doe out into the light of the snow. She could see clearly as he opened the carcass, and the bright entrails shone in warm blood spread on the snow. He crouched with his blunt nose in the meat, and as she moved, he raised his eyes and looked at her with a hungry look, over his bloody nose. "Forgive me my hunger," he seemed to say. Slowly the night fell around her. She opened the door. The wave of the cabin warmth struck her. She dropped the gun. She waved the rabbit and began her wild singing. And Sarah cried out in the gaze of her mother. And Nancy grabbed her from the bear cover with the small bread in her arms, swung her around the cabin, the ears of the rabbit flying, and outside the awful cry of the cantamount. "Dance to keep warm, stir by the fire, skin the rabbit and pop him in our mouths." And to the knocking inside her, "Yes, yes, hungry mouth," and skinning the coat of the gentle rabbit who said nothing and might have been her summer friend, but now fed her winter's hunger. "Pardon me, friend," she thought, "for all the hunger at the ribs of all of us, baying inside and out, crying our hunger, the fox and the squirrel and the field mice and the bugs and the crickets, all with the beast at our ribs. Ah, the hunger and the cry of all brothers. Is it you, boy, knocking and splintering my ribs from hunger? You'll have in you the hungers and the haunts and the hounds of this night. The little rabbit dropped for you from the mountain lion's mouth. Ah, you'll have a tough juniper heartbeat. I am strong, and you be too. Show me, Mammy, show me how you dance," and Sarah cried. So they danced together in the crazy firelight and fell laughing and tickling each other on the bed. And Nancy rose, startled, listening for other times. "I always liked it," she told Sarah, "when the folks came in winter and the new children, born and unborn, and the fresh milk from the cow." "You waiting for someone, Mammy?" "No," she said. "No track to our door now. He'll come up no path that you'll be seeing. I'll wait till February. I'll get my own food. Tomorrow there'll be some of the dough left. You looking for somebody, Mammy, to come?" "I'm looking for somebody, but he ain't coming through that door, and he'll come up no path you will be seeing. Not up that path, nor through that door." "Is that a riddle, Mammy?" "Yes, riddle me that, Sarah." They sat the kind rabbit in the pot between them and ate and sucked the little bones and licked their lips and looked at each other smiling. And the child fell over full and heavy in sleep. Nancy covered her and wrapped herself beside the fire, which now must die down to save wood. Tomorrow she would find the stumps under the snow, swing the axe, bring in the logs. She had only to wait till February. She settled down with a friend coming to her in the wilderness. "You're going to be mighty thin and swamp, but living tough and strong. I'll have plenty for you, Abe, larnin' too, and books. You're going to be a tall, raw-boned hunter swamp baby, made of too much rabbit meat, I reckon lean and lonesome, but sweet as a pawpaw. You're gonna be my loneliness made tall, my hunger walking, a friend to all."